Today on the AF Podcast, I'm joined by NBA veteran and two-time NBA champion Joel Anthony as we take a tour down his basketball journey. We break down all the peaks and the valleys, when his passion and love for the sport first started, to playing on the Miami Heat, which is probably going to remain as one of the most famous teams we've ever seen in the history of sports. His experience as an undrafted player trying out for the Heat, which honestly is it's a great story within itself, and so much more. For you basketball fans, and honestly just fans of hard work and perseverance in your life, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It's crazy where life can take you with belief in yourself and having an open mind to just go for it. So please enjoy this episode. South Sharaf is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows with South Sharaf. And when you get to rating this episode, amongst all the other ones, of course, just make sure you click on all 5 stars. It's actually good for the soul. For real. And to catch up on my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthSharaf.com. Once again, that's SouthSharaf.com. It's the AF Podcast with Cal C on South Sharaf Radio. Warden.
Welcome to the AF Podcast with Cal C on South Sharaf Radio.
Welcome to the AF Podcast. My next guest is a first-timer to the AF. He's also a Team Canada alumnus, a 10-year NBA veteran, played 12 years in the pros overall, a two-time NBA champion, and he's one of the few NBA players in this century that have given a choice between seeing J. Cole or Marshall Montano in concert. He'd be heading to the Fet with his Antiguan flag and wouldn't even think twice about it. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the podcast, please welcome Joel Anthony to the show. How you doing, sir?
What's going on, man?
I'm not lying, though, am I?
No, you're right. You're right, 100%. No hesitation.
No hesitation. J. Cole's nice, but you know it don't mess with the
music. No, right, exactly. No disrespect to J. Cole, you know. Definitely a fan of his music, but yeah.
Now, first
Soca
of all,
to the world, you already know.
Yeah, no, of course. Soca's everything, man. It's a vibe right now. That's what it is. So first of all, how's retired life? How's it treating you so far? In terms of, I know you just recently finished playing, but how's everything going so far? Like, how's retired life treating you?
Things have been good so far. You know, it hasn't really hit, you know, so much that I'm done, just because I've gone back to playing, you know, a lot later than this. Like, we're about to be end of October.
Right.
But it's been good, you know, just knowing I'll be able to, you know, spend more time with my family, be back here more, especially for my daughter, you know, just to be able to be around more. It's a real good feeling.
That's cool. Now, with everything that you've accomplished in your career, and this podcast, of course, is about your career more or less, I definitely want to start things off with the NCAA finally caving in and starting the process of giving student athletes the opportunity to make money off of their likeness. I'm pretty sure you've been following up with it, but why do you think it took so long for them to get on board with that?
Probably don't want to give up any of that money that they're getting. You know, like, obviously, you know, I think it's obviously not as simple as that, but, you know, and you break it down basically, they make so much money off of these kids that play, you know, especially obviously, you know, the major sports like football, basketball. There's obviously, you know, financial reasons to not want to, have anyone else
make money,
you know, benefit from that.
Yeah. Cause I don't know. I always feel like, I know obviously you're a D1 player, but like, I just feel like it's that whole process of it is just, it's been so messed up because, I mean, you look at some of the contracts they have now. I read the stat today that that basically the three college football games, like the championship games that ESPN buys every year for the, I think for the next 12 years, I believe I heard this on Tim and Sid, but they were talking about just for the three games, the two semifinal games and the championship game, that costs $7.3 billion. So I mean, you look at that, and that's just those three games. That's not even like all the other games they're showing. That's just the three games, you know, every year for the next 12 years or 10 years or whatever it is. And I'm like, the fact that, you know, a player doesn't, you know, like if a player takes a $20 from a booster, you know, this whole scholarship goes into question. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's insane to me.
Yeah, no, it's pretty sad, like how they enforce the rules to, you know, not only not to be able to like fully provide, you know, certain benefits for players, but also, you know, how strict they are in terms of taking that stuff away. Like, it's crazy that, you know, I remember when I was going in D1 and I was playing at UNLV, mm-hmm. I actually had to pay taxes. Wow. As a Canadian student, I had to pay taxes.
Wow.
And on my scholarship when they did give me money.
Oh my.
And then, you know, like there's, you know, apart from we went on the road or something like that, the little bit of money we got there, like there was nothing financial, you know, help apart from, you know, your room and board. So like, mm-hmm. if you wanted to make any extra money, like you'd have to, you know, like get a job, you know, and that was it. And obviously, like, you know, we're grateful for being able to have the opportunity to get a free education.
Right, of course.
But I should be, as a student athlete, I should be, I believe, like, they should be allowed to be able to make money for themselves, especially, you know, for some that actually struggle a bit.
And, I mean, as somebody like yourself, you know, you're, at that time, I mean, you have a bit of a higher profile, you know. I'm not saying, like, the university is making millions and millions of dollars off your back, but I'm just saying, like, if you want to go out there and make a local commercial, like, it shouldn't have taken until 2020 or 2021 for you to finally start to get that opportunity. Like, I just think it's extremely long overdue. And I mean, let's face it. I mean, basically it's like the haves and the haves not. This is like the equivalent of like crumbs to basically what they're still making. So the fact that they're still kind of fighting this off, I think it's hilarious. Because really, it's nothing. Like, I mean, even for a player not every single player is going to be able to make money off their likeness. Like, of course, like the person that's the athlete that's on the, you know, water polo team isn't going to be able to make the same as somebody on the football team, of course. But you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, you should still be able to. It shouldn't have taken this long for this to happen, really and truly. Like, it really, like the fact that we're finally having this conversation, you know, and only now, 2019, this is happening. Like, I think that's insane. Like, that's so many years, like, you've reaped the benefits of everything, you know? Even though, yes, having a scholarship is great, but, yeah.
Yeah, it's just taking a while, but it is, obviously, it's great to see that they're finally taking the steps and, well, you know, taking that big step, you know, with California passing that ruling down. It's just about time. Like, regardless, like now, I think, obviously, like, it's not, they're not, you know, all the way there in terms of completing their goal. Like, there's still, you know, obviously so many other states, like directly the NCAA isn't quite on board with this yet. You know, you just have one state that's approved it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to take a while, but, you know, now that the ball is actually rolling, you know, hopefully we'll, we'll be able to see, you know, a lot more schools be able to provide that type of benefit and for the students, right? Because obviously it's really just the right thing to do at the end.
And do you think, like, I mean, I don't think it will, but do you think this will cause some players to stay, or do you think they're still gone after 1 year?
Yeah, like obviously it's not going to keep. Keep players to stay in college, yeah, because I think, you know, the kids are going to be able to make more, you know, to make a little bit of money for themselves, but this isn't going to be like a huge salary or anything like
right,
that.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's not going to be anything compared to what you could you know, make as a pro. Now, if it was something, well, I wouldn't even say close, you know, obviously close to the NBA standards would be, you know, would be a joke, but even something that was on a low end, you know, a really low end, but if guys felt they were getting a certain amount of money that they wouldn't have, like, the burden, you know, especially guys that, you know, have families, either have families themselves or have families that, you know, are struggling financially, they might not feel that pressure to have to go make that jump right away. Like, right. It's possible, but I still think, you know, I mean, for the most part, everyone, you know, if there's an opportunity to go pro, you know, there's really nothing in college that's going to keep a lot of those students there. Like, unless someone really wants to graduate that bad, that's not happening.
Yeah, like an RJ or a Zion is still taking that 1 year and they're gone.
Yeah, exactly. So, and on the other side of that, you also have, you know, talks of doing away with the one and done again. There's been talks about that, about, you know, them wanting to get rid of that, because that would change, you know, a lot of things also. Players getting money, like, players might not even go to college. So, like, the ones that are talented enough to really make that big impact might not even go to college, might just go pro, you know, try to go pro right out of high school.
Well, I mean, and you're seeing it now, especially with, like, LaMelo Ball and, you know, and those guys going to, what, Australia? Like, playing Australia and stuff. So, like, the lanes are opening up now, right?
He's in Australia now. There's a kid, I forgot his name, but he took an internship with, I think it was Under Armour.
New Balance? Was that last year, right?
It was New Balance, Under Armour. But, you know, said he wasn't going to go to school and, you know, needed a way to make some money. And so did that for a year and then went to the draft after.
Yeah, still got drafted first round.
Like, guys are definitely getting, and he was a first round pick. So guys are definitely getting creative in terms of ways of being able to generate some money income for themselves when they're essentially, like, blocked from that for a year because of the NCAA and the rules that they've put in.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a benefit for sure. Like, you do want to see some of the options open up. You know, not everybody's going to be able to be in that situation, but for the guys that are, like, why not, right? If I have a son, but, you know, my son is like 17, 18 years old and he's the number one kid in the country. And, you know, all these companies and all these schools, not like schools, but all these companies and different things are looking at him. Yeah. You're going to start weighing those options out. Like, hey, you know, you can still go to school, but you don't have to, like, actually be there. You can take it online. You know what I mean? Like, you can still get your degree. You can still do certain things as an athlete. Like, you don't have that window wasn't open forever. Right. So, you know, if you can get to it a little bit quicker, I mean, I'm not really angry at that either. In terms of your career and stuff, like, you know, everything always has a beginning. So where did the love for basketball start with you? Like, how did you first get into basketball?
My love for basketball probably started close to my senior year of high school.
Okay.
So, well, 15 year, like, American, like, at the 11th, like, around 10th, 11th grade, since, you know, I was from Montreal, so we only go up to the 11th grade, and probably around then is when it started to really happen for me, where I at least, like, had the, like, the love and the passion for the game, you know, like, I was actually, like, a fan, like, I loved to watch it. You know, I used to collect all the slam magazines, you know, put all the posters on the wall and, you know, everything like that. Like, it really, you know, and I was also starting to get into the game more in terms of playing. You know, I was trying to find different places to play, just go to different, you know, try to find parks to go to. You know, that's really when it started to happen for me. So I was around, like, 16 years old, 17 years old.
Did you have like an influence, like a favorite player or somebody in your area that like you kind of looked up to that kind of gave you that, put that battery in your back a little bit?
Not so much in the players. Like I just was loved the game. Like obviously I looked towards bigs. I was a big, back then, like, Shaq was with the Lakers, so, I was a big Shaq fan, and, a lot of top bigs, Kevin Garnett, he was actually the first player whose shoe, like, I actually wore. I remember getting a pair of his kicks when I was younger. That was the first signature shoe I ever wore, of a player that I liked.
Yeah.
A couple of bigs that was, I really followed, but it was just more like the game itself. Like I was just, starting to love like watching it, and I was, really just starting to become obsessed with just ball. Like I just everything, soon became like about that.
Okay, so in the beginning, you started off with playing for Dawson College, so. Like starting off as a late bloomer in the sport, and I don't know, like initially didn't have like the initial success. Like what kept you going in it, especially in the sport where you're kind of new in it?
Honestly, it was really a wake up call. Like I was in Dawson. I was in Dawson for 3 years.
Yeah.
And first year I played, and I was trying to figure things out. And I was fortunate I had guys like for people in Montreal. That know some of the OGs like Trevor Williams, Wayne Yearwood.
Yeah.
Like those were actually like my two coaches.
Okay.
When my first year over there, and just being able to learn from them and hear from them and take some advice. I want to get into it more, but by my third year, I played like half the season at AAA with Olga and. One of the best teams that Dawson was able to put out, and the second half of the season, I wasn't on the team, and I just made a decision, it just kind of clicked with me where I just said like, look, I'm, loving the game and being a fan and everything is great, and playing it is great, but I really wanted to do something with ball, and. I didn't know, exactly how I was going to get there or, what exactly I was going to do, but that's when it kind of clicked for me. I was about 18, 19 then. That's when it clicked for me that, I was going to have to really, really put a lot of work in and the wheels were turning and I just started to work. I was just trying to figure it out on my own at first, honestly. But I did have guys like those guys and different guys in the city that actually wanted to, that saw something in me, and I had no idea, but they saw something and that's where, that work started to come from. Like just me just wanting to say like, look, I want to go out there and, take basketball as far as I could go with it.
Okay. And then, excuse me. Now, some people know, like, you went from there and you ended up in Florida at Pensacola Community College, right? And shout out, so,
yeah,
and congratulations to your Hall of Fame status. I saw you got a plaque the other day. You got into the Hall of Fame, right? Congratulations with that, first of all.
Thank you.
So then you ended up, like, in UNLV, as we were discussing before. So throughout that process, like, when did you start thinking that, shit, I can actually make a living from this?
The thought started to creep in like around like my second, my sophomore year at, Pensacola Junior College. So that's when I started to get, like, I was already getting recruited a little bit already.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting like a lot of interest from D1 schools, a lot of mid majors, high majors. And I was trying to, I was thinking like, man, like I have all these like, really good schools trying to recruit me, and it started to click that, I might be able to do something. Like I could go, a little bit farther than what I ever thought I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to UNLV, I kind of made the decision that, I already knew like kind of where I was going, like what I was going to do. But
yeah.
When I got there, I went to UNLV. The reason I went to UNLV partly because like I love like my whole visit with the staff, the players. Like it was, I felt it was a great situation. But they were going to play me right away.
Okay.
So I was going to be able to play right away. My other option that had been like talked about throughout my whole recruitment and that I almost committed to was I was going to go to Nebraska.
Okay.
And I was going to redshirt.
Okay.
I was going to redshirt my first year, my junior year though. So I'd have 2 years of eligibility after.
Yeah.
Because the talk was like, look, if you're able to develop more, everyone was like, look, Joel, like you could actually play pro. Like you could really make money like playing ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it was that time when I was really, you know, like my whole focus was like, okay, I have to do whatever I can now to, I'm trying to be the best ball player that I could be personally, but you know, then now I have a chance to like actually make some money and like do this. Like this will be my like career. You know, mm-hmm. it kind of changed everything then. And you know, I was just thinking about, you know, like what I could do, like be able to take care of my family and that type of stuff just kind of pushed me forward into it. And so I actually ended up my senior year redshirting at UNLV anyways.
Oh, did you?
And that was a conversation I had with my coach then, Lon Kruger, and he was like, look, like, you have a real shot. And he coached in the league before, and he was like, look, yeah, you have a real shot of
the
going
Hawks, right?
Pro. Yeah, he was with the Hawks and the Knicks.
Okay, okay.
And then I was one of his first recruits. Like he got to UNLV same time as me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just saying, like, look, you played your year, but, you know, roster-wise, too, it just works out. Like, it would work out really well, and it'd be great for you if you redshirted. And so I ended up still redshirting, but I redshirted my senior year, so I only played 1 year after. But the thought was, you know, to him, he was like, look, you could go overseas and make good money. And also, after, you know, like maybe after a year you develop, like, you could have an opportunity to, like, you know, make a team in the NBA. Like he really felt that.
Mm.
And so, you know, to me, I was just like, look, like, I figured, like, I was just going to, you know, go overseas. But I knew that I had a shot to, you know, be a pro. And that was kind of like my whole thought process, that I have a legit shot at that point. I was like, I really feel like I could be a pro. I had no idea, like, I'd have a chance to go straight to the league.
To the
but,
league, yeah.
You know, working my way in. But that was... That's really where it all came in. Like, well, once I was in school, and you know, around my junior sophomore junior year, that's when it all started to come together.
No, that makes sense. But UNLV just felt like home at that time over in Nebraska. It just felt like home more so than anything else.
Yeah, like I really love it. I still love it, you know, like Vegas. I know everyone thinks of, you know, the strip and everything at Vegas, but it's really, everyone asks me, they're like, yo, like you went to Vegas, like how did you go to school there? Like, it's crazy, I couldn't do it. I was like, look, it's different when you're in college, you know, as opposed to, you know,
you're a grown man.
When you're older, you know, yeah, exactly, legal age, and you're going to Vegas. You know, even though, like, by my senior, like, I was old enough to do whatever, but I was just so focused on what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really felt that I only had one shot to be able to make this, and so I wasn't gonna let anything come in the way and say, well, I could have not done this, maybe not gone down to the strip, you know, a couple nights when I should have been resting, mm-hmm. might not have gambled with the little money that I might have made, you know, away, or, you know, just do stuff that was going to distract me from, you know, what I need to do.
Yeah, true.
I'm a big believer in sacrifice, you know, and so I just felt bad to give, you know, give stuff up to be able to get where I needed to go.
All right, so from there, you basically, you know, you get down to Miami. Like, how did that even process work? Like, you got an agent, obviously. So, like, how did it get to the point where you got a chance to try it with the Heat? Like, you know, and by the time,
yeah.
And when you went to try it with them, they were, what, like 1 year removed from winning the NBA championship, right?
Yeah, they had won it, not the previous season, but, yeah, the season before that. They weren't at first. Like they weren't even looking at me. No one knew who I was. Though I was playing well, I finished. I finished my season. Like I was defensive player of the year. Yep. We had gone to the tournament. You know, went all the way to the Sweet 16. But you know, like no one really knew who I was, and it wasn't until later. You know, like you said, like I've been a late bloomer in like all my stages. So we were playing Colorado State, and they're actually scouting Jason Smith, who they actually ended up drafting. Like they drafted him and then traded him to Daquan Cook on draft night. So it was wild that like they're scouting, but like they were, you know, they're obviously planning on making moves during the draft. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, they obviously when they're looking at him, like we were playing against each other, so they saw me, and so you know some of the scouts were a little intrigued and asked about me. And once I signed with my agent, you know, after the season was over, I'm training. I stayed in Vegas, and I was training down in Vegas over at Impact, where a lot of like the pre-draft guys go. So there's guys that were, you know, like. Corey Brewer was down there. He had just, you know, come up winning the trip in Florida. Yeah, like,
so the Florida, Aaron Brooks, the Florida guys. The Florida
you had a bunch of like, you know, guys that, you know, you expected to see maybe like in the green room or draft the first round, second round, or over, like, were at least like highly, really good players that people knew about, you know, and everyone's over there in Vegas. And I was just working out. My agent was like, look, I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know if I could even get you a workout. I'm just gonna tell you I'm gonna work for you, and you know we're gonna, you know, I'm gonna do everything I can to put you in a good situation. And you know, he's, you know, a really good agent that's been in the business for a long time. And so I actually got my first workout in Phoenix, like as an alternate.
Okay,
like they're like someone dropped out last minute. They're like, yo, like we need a big, and so they call my agent, and you know I sent me over there, did well, ended up going back a second time for another workout, and it just kind of like snowballed because people were like, yo, who is this kid like that was at this workout? And you know, more and more people started to ask about me, and I started end up doing more and more workouts. And Miami, obviously, like because of the interest they had before, they brought me down for a workout too. And, I guess I impressed enough that once the draft came and went, you know, I went undrafted, but, the calls started coming in for, you know, teams wanted to bring me into training camp. And, you know, most of the teams just had like non-guaranteed deals, but Sacramento and Miami were the two teams that had partials. Okay. So there's partial guaranteed contracts from both of them. And, you know, I just felt like we both felt that the best bet would have been Miami. Like, they're a team that had, you know, obviously a culture and a need, a want for players that are really strong defensively. And, you know, I feel that I would just be able to fit that mold, and I could be a part of the team. So, you know, I went down there, ended up signing with them on a partial, and you know, make good contract. I had to, you know, fight my way through summer league and training camp, and you know, just to be able to make the opening roster. But yeah, that was, you know, pretty much the process that I had to get through. I had to go through like to get there.
It's funny because you're talking about, you know, how you're always a late bloomer, but I feel like a late bloomer in some ways. I feel like it kind of. I don't know. I feel like it kind of helps your career, and just in the sense that, like, being a late bloomer, it gives you that sense of appreciation. Like, you just don't take anything for granted because you're so new to the game, and for yourself, like, you have so much passion that, like, you know how it is, and I'm sure you've seen it, where some athletes, they come in and they feel like, you know, the world owes them something, right? But, like,
I
think it's a benefit. It's actually a weapon.
Yeah, exactly. There's no sense of entitlement or anything like that because, like, nothing's ever been given to you. Like, no one even knew, like, who you were. You seen that one picture that went viral in the draft where, like, all the media guys are all around Zion, And then you have like the one kid who's just sitting, like he's just sitting there, like mm-hmm. at his part of the podium, like just fine. Yeah. Like, and like no one knows like how, you know, how good he is, what type of career he's got. He could have like a great career that, you know, would be like a great story, but like that's someone that, you know, didn't have, you know, that type of attention. I'm sure like mm-hmm. they're not going to take anything for granted. But if anything, those are the guys that, you know, are always going to be real hungry and are going to be working because, you know, nothing was ever given to them.
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay, so you get to the point, you do the tryout, boom, 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 and then all of a sudden you find out you made the team. When you made the team, did you feel like, yeah, like, you know what, I deserve to be, I work hard? Or did you have like that?
Nah, it was like,
it was like a pursuit of happiness like, moment, wasn't it?
What? Hey, I'm telling you, it was, you know, apart from winning the championship and my daughter being born, one of the happiest days of my life.
Oh, I can imagine.
Like, it was, so we, so there's like five or six, it might have been like almost six guys that were all on like different partials in camp. Mm-hmm. So no one knew, you know, who was going to make it. There was two spots. And like six of us, so no one knew who's gonna make it. So at the last night of camp, you know, the regular season, you know, for practice for the regular season was about to start the next day. And so, you know, this is the time everyone has to know. So my agent calls me up. He's like, you know, did you hear anything? I was like, no, I didn't hear anything. Did you hear anything? He's like, nah. I was like, all right, well. Heard that, you know, a couple guys were let go, though. Heard two guys were let go. I was like, okay. Well, he's like, look. I was like, so what do I do? He's like, well, just go into the gym like you usually do. He's like, no news is good news. Like, that's what he used to always say.
Right.
So I go into the gym, and the way, like, the Miami locker room is set up, you have, like, the locker room that all the players are in. Mm-hmm. And then at the side, like, where the bathroom is, it's, like, this real big area. So you have bathrooms, like, off in, like, kind of the side. You have the jacuzzi and then, like the hot tub. And then there's, like, a row of, like, lockers in that, like, kind of bathroom-type area.
Okay.
Like, no one... But it's like lockers, like you would just change it because, like, if you're changing into like some shorts to like go in the hot tub or something like
yeah.
You know, like it's not. But that was the locker room area that everyone that wasn't on the team was using
because
there's so many guys.
Right.
Yeah. So I go back there, you know, thinking like, okay, I'm, you know, same thing. I guess I'm going to go practice and everything because I used to go, you know, I go to the gym so early. I go over there and I look, I don't see myself. I don't see anyone's stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm confused. I you know, like, I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is brand new to me. And so I walk into the locker room and I see the equipment manager. I see one of the guys I was trying to make it. He played in the league last year, like the year before. And so I wasn't sure if he was already on or not.
Yeah.
But, the equipment manager was there. And so, you know, I go to ask him and I was just like, hey, you know, like, where's the gear? Like, I don't know the situation. I don't know what's going on. Like, are people going to, like, is someone supposed to talk to me before, you know, or let me know what, if I made it or not. And he doesn't say anything. And he just like looks over to the side at one of the lockers. And I'm like, what are you looking at? I look over there and I see my name on the locker.
Are you serious? And that's how you found out?
And that's how I found out.
Oh my God.
I just saw my name on the locker. I was going crazy. I ran out the locker room. I picked up my phone. I'm trying to call. I tried to call my agent at first. He ain't like he wasn't around. Like he wasn't picking up. Couldn't reach him. I'm trying to call my mom. Can't reach my mom.
Oh, so
anyone
even
that
get
knows
no-
my mom knows that she's like the busiest woman. Even though she's retired, she's like the busiest woman in the world. I can't reach her. I'm leaving voicemails, you know, on both their phones, like, you know, with everything that's going on. I'm trying to like keep it calm and everything because like no one even like sees me this emotional and happy like this. So it was really like one of the best feelings ever. You know, being able to see that, like, I can't, you know, I was just like, man, I can't believe I made it. You know, like, I can't believe I made it. Like this is real. Like I'm really here. And I just never knew either way, like, how it was going to be. Like, I knew I was confident in myself in being able to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, until you actually make it, like, you just don't know. You just don't know. So, like, I was, yeah, like, extremely happy, grateful, you know, excited. It was, yeah, that was one of the best feelings right there.
So I want to tell you a quick story because obviously I knew that you were trying out for the Heat because your cousin Randall, who's, you know, a South Sharaf fans know, this is Randall Walter, you know, CEO Team Lightskin, I like to call him. he called me and he told me, right, that he's like, yo, Joel's trying out for the Heat. So I'm like, oh, shit, good. That's cool. Like, you know, because at this point in time, I've never seen you play. So I had no reference to go on. I'm just like, yo, you know, that's family. You know, I mean, Randall's family. So I'm like, yo, if your cousin's going through it, I knew you at the time, obviously. But I'm like, yo, that's cool. That's good. You know, that's good to see. I'll never forget this. I was on the bus. I was coming home from work. And Randall calls me and he's like, yo. I'm like, yo, what's up? He's like, yo, he made the Heat. I'm like, who? He's like, Joel. I'm like, he made the Heat. What, he's hot? Like, he's sick? Like, what's going on? Like, it didn't even compute in my head. And he's like, yo, he made the team. And yo, and it's so funny because I'm like, yo, he made the team. I'm like, oh, good for him. Good for him. And then I'm like, yeah, so wait, hold on. Wait, what? Wait a minute, what? Like, it just, everything just stopped. Like, and the whole conversation, I was just quiet. We were just quiet. All I kept saying was like, so wait, hold on. So Joel's going to be playing with Shaq and Alonzo. And he's like, he's going to be playing with Shaq and Alonzo. I'm like, so he's playing with Dwayne Wade. Playing with Dwayne Wade, man. I'm like, okay. So again, he's playing with Shaq and Alonzo? Like, that's all the whole conversation went. Like, we were just so like, holy shit. Like, what the hell is happening right now? So I can't imagine what it must have been for you, but I know he was proud as hell, and I was just like, "Yo, I was just shocked. I was just shocked."
Yeah,
that must have been an incredible feeling for sure. Especially like I said again, like the where you're coming from, where you're undrafted, you don't know what the next move's gonna be. So that's got to be a crazy moment. Wow, that's crazy. That's a crazy way to find out. So I figured you probably got pulled into the office or something. Like that's a funny story.
Yeah, nah. Yeah, no, I just looked up and saw my name there.
Wow. That's crazy. Wonder. So was that your welcome to the NBA moment, or did you have a different one where you're like, damn, like, this is the NBA, this is real? Like, what was that moment for you?
That moment was, I don't even remember when it was. It might have been like a week or so late, like maybe a couple weeks later. Could have been a month, I'm not sure, but we're so like after practice, that's when Shaq and Zoe get their extra work in. So you know, I'm the young guy, I'm the rookie on the team, so I have to get in like a whole bunch of work like in the morning, like early before practice. So I usually get my work in, then we practice, and then I work out with them after.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're going through the workout, and you know, they stop and like they're teaching, you know, at the same time, and you know, both of them are telling me like, hey, like you should do this, you know, like Shaq's like, hey, but like, look, like do this, you know, Zoe's like, look, like when you do this move, like this is what you need to do, and that was like the one time, I think, like really one of the only times where I was just like, I just couldn't believe, you know, the situation and like where I was. I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, I'm really here with these two guys. Like, I had their posters on my wall.
I was gonna say they're walking
like,
posters,
I'm
man.
Here. Yeah, like I'm here, like learning from them, and you know, those are my two of my vets. Like, I appreciate them so much too, because when I got there, you know, they, and I don't know, it's just, you know, Dave's looking out for each other, but also, you know, just who they are. Like, Shaq really, you know, welcomed me in like I was like I was family. You know, he came in and, you know, he would always make sure, you know, talk with me, he'd joke around and everything. You know, everyone sees like how his personality is.
Yeah.
He's like that and even more in person. But, you know, especially me being so quiet all the time, you know, I've always been a quiet guy. And he'd always, like, every time, like, if I walked in the room, like, he would even, like, if he didn't say anything, he'd at least give me a look. Mm-hmm. You know, like, all the time, you know, and he'd always, you know, like, keep everything light, you know, when it came to, you know, like, stuff off the court. And on the court, you know, he'd like, talk to me, like, during games and, like, you know, try to, you know, show me different reads on the court. And, you know, he really helped a lot. And Zoe was someone that really looked out to, you know, not having, I don't want to say, like, not having money, but not having, like, a lot of money or knowing what to do, because, you know, it's not like as a rookie, like, you come into, like, you know, a huge amount of money, mm-hmm. even though you're still making, you know, a solid amount. But he really hooked me up with, like, anything I needed. Like, he gave me all these suits and shoes mm-hmm. and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, he had so much stuff himself. Like, even if it was something that he had worn, like there's some stuff that, like, wasn't even, you know, the packages weren't even open on, like, some of the shirts. Like, it was just stuff that, like, wow. he just had. So now it was raining his closet. I was, you know, he was first player whose house I ever went to his house a couple times. You know, I had some food and was able to talk with him and raided his closet and got all the stuff I could.
That's cool.
But, you know, like having guys like that, like, but that moment, you know, and with those guys and, like, what they meant, you know, to me before, you know, during and even after playing, is that was my moment where I was just like, man, I can't believe this. Like, this is a crazy situation for me to be in.
Now I always hear, you know, NBA practices, I mean, any professional team's practice is hard. But I hear it's different in Miami. How hard are those practices, man?
Oh, those are next level. Those are next level practice. I was warned too. I was warned.
Were you?
When I went to Miami, when I was going to Miami, and I would meet, like, just like not even people, like, involved, like, with the team or even not even the team, just people that knew basketball. And they're like, hey, you know, young fella, like, well, where you playing? I'd be like, oh, I'm going to the camp with the Heat. They would stop, look me in the eye, and be like, look. Be in shape. They're like, look, we don't care about anything else. Just make sure you're in shape. I was just like, you know, like, I've had, like, five different people come, you know, every time I mention Miami, they tell me, like, I'm supposed to be in shape. And, you know, I've always been someone that's, you know, been in really good shape. I've always taken care of my body and, you know, been fortunate to be, like, really athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was able to get through, you know, like, the camp and everything, but to me, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know that. And I hear, like, the whispers from, like vets that come in from other teams, and they're like, look, this is not how, like, every NBA team does it. Like, there's teams out there that have, like, way easier training camps. And I think, you know, the Heat camps are really tough, though. Like, they... You know, I feel in some ways they really try to see who can survive them, you know, try to break you down and see who can survive. Especially that first year, like, I was, you know, the first year, you know, Riles was still coaching.
I was going to say, you had Riley, too.
So,
that was like, yeah.
Riley. Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
But those are, they're definitely tough. But, you know, I think for young guys, it's really good because, like I said, like, it's the only thing you know. So... anything else, like, that's going to be a breeze for you. You know, you go to any other camp after that, you know, so I think it really prepares you, you know, for the young guys, really prepares you, you know, physically for what to expect, you know, going into the season and being, you know, just being in the best shape possible for yourself mm-hmm. to be the best athlete you can be.
Prior to, you know, I don't want to say, like, you know, I could be answering this question for you, but what would you say as a player, what was your best moment in the league prior to 2010?
Prior to 2010, best moment in the league?
Because you guys made a couple of playoff runs too, right? Like you had one series against Boston, one against Atlanta.
Yeah.
It's all a blur, isn't it?
Good question, Mike. Oh yeah, it really is. I was, I think, starting at the beginning of the season, my second year. That was a pretty big moment because I started like it must have been at the most 2 weeks into the season. I ended up getting the starting job over there, and that was, you know, like that was pretty big because, you know, I went from, you know, the whole progression of me, you know, trying to, you know, get better as a ball player to trying to, you know, make it to league, to, you know, and, you know, now I'm here and I'm learning and, you know, go from a season before where, you know, I was a rookie and I didn't really play until like the last, what, like 2 months of the season. So now I'm coming in with the same mindset that, you know, like I have to, you know, do whatever I can to bake it and try to get on the floor. And then all of a sudden I'm starting. That was pretty huge, pretty big moment.
That's huge. So, I'm sure everybody's gonna want to like know about the Heedle experience and all that stuff. But I just want to know personally, like what happened to your life when it was announced that LeBron and Chris Bosh were coming to play in Miami and they were about to be your teammate? Maybe it didn't change. I don't know, but I would have to think it did. Like what happened to your life at that point?
Obviously, like everyone I knew I was on the team, but people didn't even know that I opted out.
Yeah, that's right.
That summer. Yeah, so I wasn't sure what exactly was going to happen once Bron announced that he was, like, the whole decision thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I had, like, that's when I didn't even know what exactly was going to happen because going into it, Chris was coming back, so like, okay, like I know what Chris is coming over, and then I knew like D-Wade was going to come back.
Right.
So I was like, all right, cool. Like, well, we're going to be good. And then Bron's like, I'm, you know, making decisions. I'm taking my time to South Beach. I'm like, wait, what? I was like, there's not going to be enough room for me. I was like, nah, like wait a minute.
You're thinking you weren't even going to be on Miami.
Yeah, I was like, what did I do? Like, but you know, it's a whole different situation for them right now. But like, my phone was blowing up. You know, once he made the decision, everyone's like, congratulations on the championship. You know, this is gonna be great. Like we can't wait to, you know, like to see you all out there. And I was like, look, I don't even know. I need to call my agent. Like, I don't know if I'm really gonna make it. But it meant a lot that, you know, not only was I able to get a new deal that, you know, we wanted to get. You know, I was doing this and being, you know, going to be a part of what was at the time like potentially going to be like a really great team, and you know, turned out to, you know, to work out really well. You know, would want to get one more, like especially that first one.
Yeah.
But. You know, like winning those, you know, a team that was able to win back-to-back championships like that was such a special, you know, it's such a special thing to be a part of, and knowing that at least like the potential of that happening when I re-signed and them wanting me to be a part of that, like that was, you know, really big for me to know that they wanted me to be a part of that.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, I think I remember LeBron saying specifically, like, yo, we need to get, like, Joel Anthony or something like that. And I was like, wow, look at life, man. Like, wow. I remember.
Yeah, it was funny. Like, I remember being, I was in my condo, and so he made the decision. Mm-hmm. And then my phone started blowing up. And then when he said that, because he said my name and Rio's name.
Yes.
And then my phone started blowing up even more, like after that. Like, it was the whole thing was just crazy. There was fireworks going on in the city. Like, people in Miami were just losing it.
I can imagine. And that had to be, like, a crazy summer for you, too, because, I mean, for me, like, I've been following sports long enough to know that the pressures change once you go from being, like, a decent or a good team to a championship contender. But now you're in a situation now where not only are you a free agent, you sign a brand new deal, But you're in a situation where not only does the expectations change, but you're playing for like one of the most famous teams in all of sports immediately before you even play the game, you know? And right. like that, your summer must have been just insane. That just in terms of just readjusting to everything, you got a brand new deal. You know, you've solidified your roots in the NBA now because of this deal, and now like you're basically like you're part of the Jackson Five, basically, essentially at this point.
Yeah. It was that like the summer. I think some of it, the fact that I played with the national team that summer,
right?
So the national team is always taking up a lot of my time, a lot of my summers, and so I wasn't, I wasn't around like Canada or the U.S. like as much because we were overseas. We're in Turkey.
Okay,
we're in Turkey playing in the Worlds.
Okay,
we're playing in the Worlds over there. So I wasn't around everyone as much to like have all that energy. You know, but I just knew it was going to be big. I was like, yeah, it's going to be big. And, you know, even when I was over in Turkey, you know, people were asking me and like how I felt going into it. I was just like, look, I'm just ready to go in there and work.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, I don't think anyone in the team had any idea how, like, everyone knew it was big and everyone knew it was going to be big. But the way it was, like, once we, like, got together and the whole media circus, the scrutiny, everyone, really just hating like our whole team.
Yeah, that's the other
thing. And the amount of attention that it brought, like it was no one could have seen that. We had some games and some like situations where like guys were like, "Look, I've never seen anything like this."
Really?
You know, like the type of media attention, like you had a lot of guys like vets that have been around for a while that like never seen anything like this.
There was no way to basically prepare for the backlash, especially because I know you guys, as much as it was in Miami, like, and people loved you guys, you know how it was at other places of the country. Like, there was people that wanted you guys like damn near dead. Like, they hated you guys at times as well. Did that prepare you in any way? Like, there's no way that nothing could have prepared you guys for that, essentially, right?
Yeah, no one was really prepared for that type of hate. You know, it's just there's only one word to, you know, describe it like that type of hate, you know, for our team. Like, I used to have people message me on Facebook. They're like, "Hey, look, you know, good luck to you. You know, like, you know, really like what you're doing. I hope you know, like, have a great, you know, great career and everything, great season. But I hate your team." And it was. I swear, like, if I was able to go back and get those messages, you would see, like, it was just a whole huge of, "Hey, like, good luck, man. Like, you know, to think you're gonna do good over there. But I hate your team."
Wow.
Everything was always, "But I hate your team." Like, it was, and like that was just, you know, that was before we started to actually play.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's when I was just like, "Huh, like, I guess people really feel some type of way about, you know, this team being put together." So, but once we got into it, you know, it just made us stronger and made us closer, though, because it was really like us against the world.
Oh, yeah, you know, for sure.
Where, you know, like there was no one out there. Like, obviously, like, you know, you saw fans and everything, but never felt like that feeling where, you know, everyone wanted you to lose so badly.
And what was the worst of it? Was it going to Cleveland? Was that the worst? Or what was the worst of it team-wise or for you?
No, Cleveland was the best thing that ever happened to us. Like, we were struggling. We were like 9-8 or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
People were like, "Oh, this isn't going to work." And, you know, they're going to have to blow it up. And, you know, fire as well. Like, everyone was just killing us. And we went to Cleveland. And obviously that was such a big game, you know, with Bron going back. And, you know, to this day, like, the type of energy that was in the building, how loud everyone was, you know, and just the vibes that you got, like, being in those games, there's nothing in terms of opening night anywhere, NBA finals,
really?
Like, any playoff games, nothing compares to that type of energy for just that one game.
That one game.
Like, yeah, it was crazy. Like, we went out there and it was just, I've never heard such a heavy set of boos where it drowned out like everything in the arena.
Really?
Like, you couldn't hear anything. Like, but once they put his face like
on the
Jumbotron, they even got like a next level, like even higher. And it was that you couldn't hear nothing. It was, that whole energy was crazy. Like, you talk about hostile environment, like that's, yeah, in terms of like playing basketball, going into those environments, like, yeah, that was it right there. Like, that was
nothing compared to that moment.
Nothing compared to that.
Now, you know, obviously you guys go, you know, because that first year was crazy. I mean, it got better after that. Obviously, you guys ended up winning the two championships. But, like, in terms of, because you guys righted the ship, you ended up kind of breezing through the Eastern Conference. Like, how shocking was it for you personally when you guys lost in the finals to the Mavericks? Not to bring up old wounds, but, like, how shocking was it for you guys at that point? Because you figured you finally turned the corner and now it's going to be smooth sailing.
Yeah, like, in the playoffs, we were really rolling, you know, like, yeah. Those the first three rounds, like, you know, we won all of them in five, and we were really rolling, had great rhythm and everything like that going in, which is what you'd want. Like, we had, you know, everything going, like, everyone was healthy, well, as healthy as guys were going to be, but, you know, like, for the most part, we had all our guys, had good rhythm, and so, you know, once we hit the playoffs, like, we were just, you know, going through it pretty, you know, it was still like tough games, like, teams still play it tough, but once we got to Dallas, it was, after game one, I think there was a feeling that, like, man, like, we could really, you know, like, because it was a real good win for us against them in game one. And so,
and then you're up, like, I think you're up like 20 against, like, in game two, right? Like, in the fourth or something like that.
Yeah. Then we go up again in game two, and, you know, that they had that crazy fourth, and we're able to come back. And that was that's when it was just like, okay, like, you know, you usually, like, when you lose at home, it's like, all right, like we're in a real, you know, like, dogfight now. Like, yeah, like, this is when the playoffs are, you know, really start. And honestly, like, that was our first time losing at home in the playoffs. Yeah, like game two of the NBA Finals, first time we lost at home in the playoffs for that year. And you know, we just knew we're going to have to, you know, like, get down in that bunker together, you know, try to find a way to fight through this series. And, but, like, once game six came around and we lost that, like, that was one of, you know, I told you some of the best feelings, like, yeah, that right there is one of the worst feelings. Hmm. One of the worst feelings, losing the finals. Like, wow. That really hurts. And I see why, like, you know, you have guys that, like, you know, really hold that, you know, like Dallas held that against Miami for the longest, like, losing that series in 06.
06, yeah.
Not like, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it, because, like, it's one of the toughest things, because, like, you put so much into it, you sacrifice so much, and, you know, you have to go through so much just to get there, and it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
And to lose is, yeah, like, really one of the worst feelings. But I appreciate you bringing up the old wounds, so, you know,
I'm sorry. My bad. I'm sorry. But,
no,
all right.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
But you know what, to go on the flip side, though, you guys obviously righted the ship. You ended up going back-to-back and winning both titles. But for you specifically, what did it feel like for you when you won the title? Like, the first one especially, like, against OKC, running down, like, you guys are blowing them out. Like,
the first one was really big. Like once we, you know, we felt that we had really, you know, paid our dues, and, like, this was our time, you know? Like, this is our time. Like, you know, we're going to be champions, but, like, we just, you know, we just knew it, and it wasn't in any type of arrogant way or anything like that, but we just felt that this was our time, that we had, you know, we'd done everything we were supposed to do, and we're in the position to do it. And so once we won, you know, like, that feeling right there, there's a lot of, I think, validation for a lot of people. Well, a lot of guys, like, obviously, you know, guys like Bron that were, you know, obviously getting killed for, you know, not winning championships. And then, you know, that trickled off to, like, everyone else, you know, in terms of no one wanted us to win, right?
Right.
Well, our second year, it wasn't as bad because we actually did lose. So, like, people, I think, kind of let off a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me personally, I know, you know, having that feeling of where I came from, you know, like my whole journey and everything to go up, to go through this, like, gauntlet of all these different challenges that I have to, you know, just to get to where I needed to get to.
Yeah.
And to finally be here, you know, it's like, man, like, you know, I felt like I had, like, everything, like, made it to the league, was able to, you know, like, get a good contract, you know, the year before, be part of, you know, a really good team, and then finally, like, now, like, this next up, like, win a championship, you know, like, I remember in the locker room, I was talking to the GM and Ellsberg, and I was just, like, you know, just talking back and forth, and it just the whole journey and everything, and it was, you know, we're all so happy because, like, he obviously knew, like, you know, how, you know, like, my journey, you know, coming over here and trying to make it and trying to, you know, prove I belong in the league and everything like that. And so to have that feeling of, you know, now I'm a, you know, NBA champion, it was, you know, that it was pretty special. It was pretty special for me right there.
Oh, I can imagine. The one thing I always thought is I never thought the Spurs would be playing you the following year. I always thought that OKC would. They were so young and they were so gifted. Like, you knew they were going to come back, and all of a sudden, you know, they had the world, way the NBA, man. They let go hard and everything just flipped.
Yeah, they traded James Harden, and that was that was really it. Like, we definitely thought that. Like, you're not the only one. We thought that. We're just like, look, those guys. We're probably looking at the, you know, retool our team to, because, like, that's the team that we're probably going to have to face, you know, the next couple of years in the finals. Like, they were, you know, they were just, you know, they were good, young, talented, like so young, you know, obviously, like, everyone, you know, was saying, you know, how such a good job OKC was able to do to be able to, you know, get all those guys, you know, drafted on the team. So, but with James Harden leaving, like, it was a different story. And, you know, since San Antonio is always a team you had to consider, and it was one of those years where they had everything rolling for them and rolled their way all the way to the finals, the playoffs.
And it was a legendary series, because that Ray Allen shot to me remains to be like. Yeah. That has to be, like, the best shot I've ever seen in my life, man. Like, that was absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything like that. Like, that everything about that was incredible. The fact that he even touched rim in that pressure moment is just, you know, that, as a basketball fan, you can never forget. I can't imagine you, but, I mean, you can never forget that.
Yeah, it was a cold shot. It was a real cold shot. We didn't feel we were going to lose. Like, I know, to me, like, I remember the feeling against Dallas when we lost and everyone was going to the stands and the ropes were coming out to lock off the court, and, you know, when you're like, it's over, like when you finally realize and somewhat accept that, like, it's over. But it didn't feel like that, even though you saw everyone going to the stands. You know, you saw the ropes coming out, you know, people holding the ropes up inside, ready to, you know, cover the court. And it was like, nah, like, it wasn't over, you know. And that's why, you know, when Ray hit that shot, you know, he was like, those ropes out of here, man. Get those, he was cutting them out, like, saying, like, look, get those ropes out of here. We're not done. You know, we're not done. That was such a big moment.
I know you get asked this a lot in terms of, like, how is it to play with LeBron and Wade and Bosh and, you know, all the great players you play with? And I know there's a lot of great times with playing with those guys, but individually, like, what was, like, the underrated factor of playing with them? Like, you know, with the three of them I know you played with Wade the longest, even Udonis Haslem, but like, what was it like, what was the underrated features about playing with those guys that people may not really know about?
The underrated features of those guys are playing with them, like you're trying to say, what I got from, being able to play with them, like, as teammates and being around them?
Yeah, just that maybe, the public doesn't necessarily see. I'm not telling you to give us secrets, but just, in terms of playing with them, what did you get out of that experience playing with those three guys in particular?
Honestly, I think you don't realize that how much you're learning. You try to learn, you ask questions and listen to them when they talk, but a lot of this stuff, I feel it wasn't until I left that everything hit me, because when you don't have them around then, and you see how either other people operate or how other teams work and other players are, you're like, man, like I always knew these people were so good and so special, but you appreciate more, and all the stuff that they say comes back, and you end up saying things and seeing different things. You start to see the game differently because now that they're not there, but it's almost like you still hear their voice, talking about the game and breaking it down. And I feel your vision of the game and how you see basketball is what really changed from being around those guys.
Yeah.
And like I said, I felt a lot of that was after, obviously we all get better together and you learn a lot while you're there, but once they're not there anymore, it really hits you. And I feel even all that information comes in as well that you may not even been thinking of, and you just realize, this is what they're talking about. That's what they're talking about.
Okay. Now, so I know you ended up playing for a few teams after you left Miami, being the Pistons, the Celtics, the Spurs, and you had your time in the last couple years of career in Argentina and South America, where you won some championships there too. But you had a chance to play with some great pros after Miami, for example, Andre Drummond and Kawhi Leonard. So post Miami, who was a player that you played with that you didn't realize how good they were until you started actually playing with them?
I didn't realize how good. I think Dre. Drummond. He was a good young big, but once I got around him, I just remember I was just man, he's so talented. He has so many tools, and you could tell that he's really gonna be good. As long as he really stayed focused and kept working, he was really going to be good. Mm-hmm. And especially because he wasn't quite there yet. And when I was over there in Detroit, it wasn't until Dan kind of changed up how we played, because at the beginning of the year, things weren't working out at all. And once he changed it up and gave Dre a little more freedom and gave him different opportunities that were towards his strength, you just saw him all these crazy games. He was getting 20 and 20. I've never seen someone that was able to play around with 20, 20 games. Every night, be a threat for that. And I would definitely say him, in terms of how, where you knew it could happen, but seeing it happen. And then, obviously, I followed everything that he was doing after, and where he's at right now. That's great to see, because I wouldn't have, I knew he'd be good, but to be able to see him this do this well is one of the great things about being a vet in the league, where you see these young guys develop into these great players.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so and I guess by the time you got to San Antonio, you kind of knew Kawhi was Kawhi at that point, or did you even realize how good he was even at that point?
Kawhi, I think I knew he was good, because I remember from when we played him in
the finals,
played him in the finals, and also I remember watching when he won the Finals MVP,
yeah,
it was. you know, like I felt like I knew how good he was. Like obviously I was able to, once you become teammates with someone, you get to see, even though you play against them all the time, like because, you know, your teammates, you see them in practice every day, that's when you really start to, appreciate them even more. And, I started to see, I was like, man, like he is, like I knew he was really good, but like he is really, really good. Like I had someone ask me, one of my friends at the training, he's like, is Kawhi even like, he was asking if Kawhi was a top 10 player. And I was just like, look, like he's top five, like right now, like easy.
Really?
And like that's how confident like I was. Yeah, like that was the season like he could have been MVP like back in 2016.
Yeah.
Like he was on, like that's when he really started to take off. But it was some of the people in San Antonio were telling me, like, look, this is really the first year that he's getting full reign. Like Tim Duncan was on the team the year before, mm-hmm. and then so like he just retired. So this is really the first, the first year he was really getting like, look, you are our guy, like he's really like that guy, mm-hmm. Like on the team. You're able to see like what he was able to do with it, like the type of plays he was making in the games. Like he was the first person that I had met, after playing with like Bron D. Wade that like reminded me of someone on that level. Like he was, really like on that level, yeah. where he was just that special,
So basically you weren't surprised at all by what he did in the playoffs last year then, essentially, right?
No. I was not, like, I was, yeah, for sure. Like he was definitely like, that was no like frugal, like that was like he just had a good year or anything like that. Like no, he's definitely like that good. And no, honestly, like when he, like I knew Toronto, I considered Toronto like a contender. Like once they made that trade and like, yeah. brought him in, like the DeRozan was really good for that team. But I knew Kawhi, what he was going to do, like once he got over there. Now I didn't know that they'd win a championship, but yeah. like I knew he definitely made them legit contenders for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I know you recently retired from, the game and everything, but you also been representing Team Canada for a lengthy period of time. So for you, like, what is it like for you to see, like, so much Canadian talent now that's in the NBA? Like, there's so many talented players playing and contributing, like, right away. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, just coming from the Team Canada perspective and, being a part of all these young players that were coming up the pipeline, now you're seeing them shine.
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I love seeing like all this talent that's able to come out of the country.
And there's more.
There's more coming, and it's to see them do so well, and to be able to come in and like be like top talent, off the bat, like someone like me, like I had to work my way in. No one knew who I was. Like now you have all these. These guys are like number one pick, like number two pick, like number four, like, and lottery, like all these, there's so much talent, throughout this country. So it's just nice seeing them, like the country being able to catch up, in terms of hitting that curve and, being able to bring out that type of talent into the league. So I love it, especially like with the national team, because they're, where like you see all these younger guys and like you watch them, throughout the years, like even like this year, like someone like RJ, who's, I remember before he was even able to be on the national team, like when he used to like come by to practice, like him mm-hmm. and his brother, and it makes me feel old. Like I played with his dad, like on yeah. the senior team,
yeah.
And so, and he would, like give me updates, like whenever I'd see him, like he's like, man, like RJ, he's really taking off. Like he's got a chance. Like he's got a chance. I was just like, man, like really, like little RJ. And, to see him now, and like now he's like, he's that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, I love it. I love it. I'm so happy for all those kids that are able to be able to do that and have had that level of success, like so young.
you know, and coming from, you know, coming from Canada.
And what did it mean for you playing for Team Canada? Cause I know, like I said, you seem like you, I never asked you, but I know you seem like you had a lot of pride, obviously, because you played with them for so long. But, like, what did it mean to you?
It's always meant a lot. Like, and I don't know, like, everyone talks about, you know, and, you know, war and sport are, like, the two ways to represent your country, right? But it really does, like, mean something to me, like, to be able to go out there and compete, you know, and represent the country, like, for the national team. Like, I just, like, I love to play basketball, so if I got a chance to play ball in an organized setting where I could really compete for something, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, during what's supposed to be, like, my off season, you know, I'll definitely look to do that, and to do that as a, you know, as a Canadian, like, it's it definitely means a lot, and it meant a lot for me to want to see us do well, you know, like, see the team do well, see the organization be able to succeed. So not just playing, but now, like, with the state of the team and the opportunities they have now to be able to really, you know, make a lot of noise yeah. with the amount of talent they have. No, I love it, and I'm really genuinely proud for, you know, where we've come, like, how far we've come, because I've, you know, seen the whole process. Well, my version of the process the last, like, 13 years,
yeah,
14 years.
I'm hoping by, like, either this Olympics or by the 2024 in LA, like, I'm hoping by that time they'll get on the podium. Like, I mean, that's what you kind of want to see with all this talent too, because they're I think they have the most talent in the world outside of the U.S. I think.
No, they do. That goes without saying. So, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, there's some issues with, like, trying to get, you know, everyone on the same page yeah. where everyone's gonna be there to play, but you know, obviously the potential of what, you know, this team could be. Is like how can you not be excited about that?
Yeah. So, just to wrap up, like, what's next for you? Like, what are some of the things you're looking forward to doing now at this point now?
Honestly, really, now I just want to take some time off. naturally, just want to take some time off and you know, so spend some time with my family. Like I said, I've been away a lot. Yeah. Apart from that, I'm going to be working with the Raptors 905, just helping out over there right now. I actually just started today. Was over there helping out during for the training camp, and mm-hmm. I want to I still want to be able to stay close to the game, you know, and yeah. so this is a really good way for me to do that. And I could see if, you know, if I'm going to want to, you know, have that urge to transition, you know, fully into, you know, something in that realm where if it was coaching, player development, scouting, I don't know
yeah.
what it might be. But right now, you know, I'm in a situation there where I could, you know, just watch, learn, and be a part of it as much or as little as I need to be. It's nothing. You know, it's nothing super committed right now, which is perfect for me, because, like I said, I want to take time off. But working on that and looking to see what else I could do, you know, to be able to keep me busy and keep me focused. Looking at, you know, different investments. You know, I'm pretty, you know, big interest in real estate, and I want to see what I could do either here, you know, out here in Toronto, or Montreal, or back in Florida.
Okay.
So I'm trying to gather as much information as I can, man. Trying to gather as much information as I can so I could make a really good decision going forward.
And what do you want your legacy to, you know, when they talk, when you, you know, at this stage now, like, what do you want people to remember you by? Basketball-wise, I'm talking to you like you're dead, like you're not dead. But
no, it's cool. But honestly, it's like whenever someone like mentions legacy, and I know like some people are really into it, and that's like I'm totally cool. Like I get it, but it's never something that really interests me in terms of like wanting to. Like I didn't do it because I want to leave a legacy, leave my name out on. You know, it's. That was never it. So, you know, it might be weird for me to say, but I was never really, you know, interested enough in that. You know, it was really just, you know, say I did what I had to do, and you know, was able to, you know, have a real solid career, and I overcame a lot. I was, you know, a good person to the people I was around, and. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, all that is good enough for me.
Yeah, and I mean, and on top of that, like, you also, like, people like Ken Burch and stuff like that, you're inspiring guys, like, just from what you just did, just by following your passion, you know, you inspired other players younger than you to go for theirs too, right? So, you know,
that's huge as well. That's my guy too, man. That's my guy too from the city. That's someone else I'm really happy for. Mm-hmm. But like I said, like, to see those guys to be able to do well, especially, you know, like for me, like as a Montreal guy, well, when I get to see like Montreal kids like go out there and you know have a chance to be a pro and play at that level, yeah. Like that's what's even bigger. Like the country is great, but like, you know, it's a little more personal when it's someone from the city.
Yeah, it's home.
Because you know, I didn't really, you know, like have that, you know, like growing up, like. You know, I was able to meet like Sam Dallenberg after, you know, so someone that was that was in Montreal. But you know, growing up, like I didn't know of any like Montreal guys that were in the league or anything like that. So you know, to me, I didn't even think that was possible because there's nothing like that around me. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, the fact that at least like. Kids could be like, oh, like there's someone like he's from the city, like he was, you know, born and raised here too, and you know, so he can make it. Like they'll feel that they definitely have a shot to do the same.
Yeah, rooting for him and Lugans Dort too. I'm not sure. I think he's on a two way and with the Thunder, but I'm rooting for him too. You know, Montreal's own.
Yeah,
like you know, it's
definitely.
And my final question, when you look back at your career and everything that you've enjoyed from it. Who would you say has the hottest song this year? Is it Mr. Killer or Problem Child?
I don't know, but Problem Child right now, I would say he was like out of two men. But Mr. Killer's, you know, song was earlier in the silver season, so you know, around it was a big tune. But I was actually in Grenada for Spice Mask, and so because it was later on, it didn't have that same effect that it did. You know, months back. But like right now, like out of those two, I would say like Problem Child.
Yeah, he's killing it right now. He's killing it right now. That song is huge. I mean, the Run With It song is huge, it's still big. But yeah, that Problem Child song is it's a problem right now. So it's a problem for real.
For real.
All right, well, on that note, brother, listen, man, thank you for coming on the Ave, man, and you know, sharing your thoughts about your career. It's definitely appreciated it, man. I definitely appreciate it today, man. This is a joy.
Nah, I appreciate you having me, Cal, man. No, it's good to be able to be out here, and you know, I don't do that much talking. So if anything, I was able to do something like this with you, like. I think it's pretty cool. You know, I'm able to get this opportunity.
Yeah, man, I'm honored, bro. Shoot, I know. Shit, I'm honored, man. Damn.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while. It's been a while, like, but we finally here.
Yeah, man. For sure. Thank you all for tuning in to the Av Podcast, and as always. I appreciate you for the support. Special shout out goes out to Joel Anthony for coming on the Ave and sharing his story about his journey and his career. I hope you enjoyed listening to this as much as I enjoyed doing it, because honestly, you just need to hear more stories like this. As fans, you know, we just see the finished product, but you never see or hear about the work that goes behind it. And Joel's story is a real testament to hard work and an unyielding belief in yourself. Seriously, what a great experience he created out of that. And once again, I'm glad he shared it here. And as always, continue to listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all episodes, including this one, from South Sharav Radio, which you can find on all platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthSharav.com. Once again, that's SouthSharav.com. For Joel Anthony, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Sharav Radio. Shout out once again goes out to Keo for the musical production. And last but not least, shout out to Ram for the plug. I appreciate y'all. Until next time, peace. We out.